home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Live from Hollywood, it's Rated LGBT Radio with your hosts, Garrett Miller and Rob Watson.
And I am Rob Watson, and Garrett Miller is actually not here tonight, although we will be bringing you the recorded version of Garrett Miller, because during this season, I always want to play his Christmas song so that you go play his Christmas song and you go buy his Christmas song, because it is a fabulous Christmas song. But tonight, we are going to talk about God and sex and Wendy Michaels, who I'm hoping I'm bringing on now. We're going to test the technology. Wendy, are you there? I thought I heard you. Wendy, are you there? Well, what I'm going to do, because I'm going to have her phone in, because she's trying to get in here, but we're going to play Garrett Miller right now, and he is going to sing About Christmas Time.
Christmas with the sunshine in the trees. You might not even think of Santa Claus with his dogs down by the beach. Oh, their tails, they are all wagging, wagging here to there. And the joyous sounds of barking without care. Your winter clothes. You might want a tiny puppy or one with a big brown nose. Either way, you'll feel so happy with love from Santa's sleigh and playing with your puppy Christmas Day. Bathe and clip with bells and bows.
Was Garrett Miller with something about Christmas time. So anyway, now we're going to see if our second backup plan worked. And Wendy Michaels, welcome to the show.
Yes, hi.
Hi. So yeah, forget that computer stuff. Let's just go Ma Bell, you know?
I swear, I'm sure it's my fault because it was asking me all these questions about the mic and the headset and what I had plugged in. I don't know. I'm sure it was my end, but it's great that I can just talk to you like this.
Yeah, I know. And I'm actually pretty sure it's not your end, but don't worry. you should have heard my first show here where Garrett left me with running the board. I mean, you know, I specifically said, I am the talent, not the board runner, but you know, he said, no, it's really easy. Well, don't listen to my first show because you will find out that if it's really easy, then I'm really stupid. So,
you know, now I'm going to have to go listen to your first show, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. I know. That was a pure come on. I think we burned it. So we'll see. We'll see. So exciting things. Now, we talked before on about your web show that has gotten lots of awards. My sister is so gay.
How's that been going? I know. It's great. We have a distributor, and we're going to be actually officially launching it on a streaming platform called Telefilms.
So exciting.
Yeah, and it's great. It's an LGBT Netflix, really. That's what Telefilms is.
That's great. And do you think it will pick up and you guys will be doing more episodes?
We are ready to go. We have already written season two. So we just need to get the word out. We need more viewership. We need people watching our show. So that's why we're launching it on Telefilm.
Okay. Well, great. Well, okay. Everybody listening to this show, you have to go check this out. It's on YouTube right now. And if there was ever a YouTube show that deserves, like, you know, Netflix version and broadcast TV version, and we're waiting for the film version, I mean, this is it. This is so great. The dynamic between the characters is fantastic. So just, you know.
Thank you. But you know what? They can't watch it anymore on YouTube.
Oh, no.
There's a trailer. That's okay. We have a trailer now. So there's a minute trailer on it, which kind of gives you a quick look at the show and who's in it. And then it'll be launched episodes by episodes. Like, you know how I used to watch TV 15, 20 years ago, where each episode would be released every week? In the old days.
You mean before instant gratification?
I don't know. I just, you know, I'm a sitcom queen. I just still watch, you know, all of my favorite shows from 15, 20 years ago. And we kind of wrote that show along that vein, you know, with that heart in mind. So in January, as of January 29th, it's, I think, $5.99 a month. It's the subscription, which is cheaper than you know, Netflix and Hulu, and you could have both. And then you'll be able to watch our episodes every week.
Well, that'll be fantastic. So those of you who are listening to me who ran immediately to YouTube to find it because I told you it was there, it isn't. And that will ha-ha on you because it was there and you missed it. So don't make that same mistake again and follow the trailer to where
it
will be. There you go.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We can always recover here. So
that was quick. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I'm on it. It comes from doing live radio. It's like you learn to just keep talking. It's sort of like Dory and in Finding Nemo. It's like you just keep talking, Pretty soon you say something that people think is intelligent. So yeah. So I'm going to do a little housekeeping because I want to also announce that you are going to be on my other radio show out in Santa Cruz in Northern California, regular radio for the old fashioned folks, AM and FM 1080 AM Saturday at 7 PM. And did we decide you were doing the 10th of January?
I can do whatever you want me to do.
The 10th of December, That's when I really, really, really want to. The next week's available too, but I shouldn't have said that on the air. But yeah, so Wendy Michaels will be with me on December 10th on out in Santa Cruz, Saturday night, 7 p.m. With my co-host Bash. And so we will have even more fun. But what we really got together to talk about, and I'm fascinated on this for a lot of different levels, is a new play that you're working on.
Yes, it's called God and Sex. I love the title.
I do too. Just all sorts of images.
So what is a bisexual bride, a straight fiance, and a lesbian ex-lover all have in common?
A lesbian bride, a straight...
No, a bisexual bride.
A bisexual bride. So got to get it right here. Bisexual bride.
A straight fiance.
Straight fiance.
And a lesbian ex-lover.
I'm going to guess there are three characters in your play.
They are. Those are the three leads in the show. And it's a play, actually, that I started writing about, I can't even believe it now, in 2002 maybe.
Wow.
And it started out, I know, but it started out as a one-woman show.
Okay, so I'm amazed they allowed you to do that in kindergarten. Sorry.
That's so sweet. I'm just going to edit, like, the radio show, just that segment right there that you said that. That'll be my marketing.
There you go.
Yes, folks, I'm in my 20s. Yeah. So the show, God and Sex, didn't start out as a play. Like I said, it started out as a one-woman show. And I was writing about my experience getting married and how awful it was.
Oh, geez.
I mean, literally, whatever could go wrong went wrong. You know, from the tablecloths were way too short to, oh, I can't even begin to tell you. I don't want to tell you too much because some of it's in the play, but everything did go wrong. And in order to begin to do some sort of healing around this experience, I started to write a one-person show thinking that I could just tell people about it, how unspecial I felt at my own wedding.
Oh, no.
But then, yeah, it was really.
But, you know, but before you move on from that, so were the things going wrong like wedding detail things, or was it more something more emotional, personal?
I think both. Little wedding details went wrong, like we didn't get our wedding license. Family members got arrested the night before the wedding. The night of the reception, the groom's father decided the reception was over, so he announced everybody to go home at 9. We all ended up meeting in a bar downtown to celebrate. The room was too big for the wedding. These were things that right after my wedding were so incredibly important to a bride. You know, it's your day,
right.
So you want everything to be perfect. But now I'm like stumbling to remember all of the things that were so important to me that just aren't anymore, but were. And
yeah,
so that's how that story was born.
Well, part of the reason I'm focusing on that part, because we have some time here, so we don't have to rush through. And I want to take time with it. But I just got through officiating a wedding literally last Saturday. It was my nephew marrying his fiance, and I was the minister, and it wasn't my first time at that horse ranch. But I've noticed how at certain weddings where details go sometimes horribly wrong, that it's like the epicenter of the world is going on around this. I mean, it's life or death. And then afterwards, it kind of gives the wedding character, if you will. This last one was an outdoor wedding, and you're in L.A., right?
I am now, but this was in, yeah.
Oh, no, I know, but now. So you might remember last Saturday, it rained in L.A., and we were trying to do an outdoor wedding that day. The one day it rained.
Oh.
And yeah. And so, that was the touch and go moment, but it was, and we did it and it was beautiful and wonderful, but it, that will be the label on that wedding is, we were, would it go, would it not go? And, it's like, okay, it's, the rest of life is what's important. But going back to your wedding, what was the emotional thing that was going on there then?
I think the two of us, we have been best friends since high school. And I just think the two of us probably were walking down the aisle too soon. I don't want to give away a lot because some of the plot is in the play. But
right.
I think emotionally we just couldn't get near one another. You know, sometimes when you're with somebody and you have this wonderful synchronization and you're centered and it's you and that person, no matter what happens, you kind of feel like palm trees swaying in the wind. Well, we were more like oak trees. So there's an expression I used that described how I felt. I felt like I was driving down a deserted road by myself and suddenly a cow would fling itself at my windshield and I'd have to swerve it. That's how I thought of my wedding.
Now, the tone of the play itself, is it going to be sort of serial comic, or because it was intended as a one woman show, I assume that it was pretty much comedy. Is that fair assumption?
Yeah, it was. It's a comedy drama. It's kind when it was a one person show, it was kind of like a sad comedy. But over the years, I realized that I needed to kind of get honest about what the play was really about. And the play didn't really have anything to do with what went wrong at the wedding. It had a lot more to do with sexuality, both my sexuality and the groom's sexuality. So once I started to get honest about the story that needed to be told, I started writing a film. But, you know, I'm a stage theater actress. And I'll tell you, Rob, that story couldn't come together for me. I did readings and I did rewrites, and I kept getting so many critiques, and I thought, this is going on forever. Who has 300 rewrites, you know? And then when I decided to get really honest about the story, and when I say honest, it's like telling the meat of the story, you know, really diving beneath the characters. When I had the courage and I went on a journey to get that courage to really tell the right story, it came to me that it should be a play. I mean, I love the stage. I've been on the stage over 25 years, and that's the love of my life. I kept writing it for film, and I thought, well, I'll just write it for film, sell it, and make money, you know, and then move on. But really, this is a labor of love, and I want to see it on the stage. And so once that happened and it became a theater piece, there was only a few rewrites before it's ready for production. So there you go.
Wow. It says that right there. Oh, my gosh. That's fantastic. I am sitting here, like, flipping out with cheerleader pom-poms over that direction because I'm also from theater. And my writing, you know, in terms of creatively, also, I totally relate to everything you're saying, is because I sit down and what comes out of me are plays. And, you know, it's, you know, in doing these radio shows, we've had different people come on with where they've literally been putting together a film where they have the trailer for the film and the outline of the film, no script for the film, just, you know, kind of, you know, those type things put together, and it's a different process. And so plus from my perspective, a play, especially when you have characters, you can go deep. You know, you get a really living person up there on a stage and see them evolve. And there's just so much more, I don't know, on a human level that I think you can uncover and dig into in play material, where, you know, screenplays, absolutely, but you have to, it's almost like the meme version of theater, if you will. I don't know if that analogy really works. But it's like,
I get it. It's a very, you know, film is a very visual medium. You know, everything's done visually, and it's a director's medium, really. And because everything's, you know, the story really comes together, too, in the editing room, you know, if you're a director and you get to edit. But the theater, I'll go back a little bit. When I was writing it as a film, I saw what was happening in my mind, Rob. I could see, and I think it was a romanticized version of things. Like, I was watching that story unfold on screen. So I wrote it that way, not understanding the technicality or storyboarding or narrative or any of that. I just kind of thought, I want to tell this story on the screen. This is what I think it would look like if I were sitting in the audience. But as a theater actor, as a trained theater actor, I know what's needed from act to act. I know that you can't have, you know, the actress in one costume and then in a completely different location in a different costume with only 30 seconds to spare. You know, that kind of technicality. But there had to be some rewrites. I mean, there were a couple of versions where I think one of the stage readings people fell asleep, so I knew that there was work to be done.
Right. But that's the other thing with a play. You can really push it pretty far, you know, in the creative process to test it out. That's the other thing I wanted to talk to you about what the process is of, you know, sending a play from the paper up to the stage and where, you know, what the future holds in that direction. But jumping ahead on that, you know, plays are often done, you know, in secondary cities with the eye towards, you know, the mothership Broadway and, you know, how to move it towards that and all that sort of stuff. But all along the way, you get to redo it and rewrite it and, you know, recast it and all that. Whereas the film, I mean, you make a wrong casting choice and, you know, it comes out and people are throwing popcorn and you're done. It's like, you're there. It's what it is. So tell us a little bit more about some of the other characters. Who is the lesbian lover and how does she, you know, the ex-lesbian lover feed into this?
Well, she and the lead character were together before she got engaged to the man she's getting engaged to. And they're planning a wedding, and she asks her ex-lesbian lover to be her bridesmaid because she feels like she's not supported. Because where they're getting married, it's a very homophobic town, a very homophobic church, very homophobic environment. So she doesn't quite, you know, get her place in the world, and she doesn't really, the lead, Amy, doesn't really know what she's about yet, and she still has a lot of shame surrounding having been with women, and she wants to keep that really secret, so she's, you know, planning this very normal, straight-looking wedding, but she knows that she's going to be all alone there, so she asks her ex-lesbian lover to be her bridesmaid. And the problem with that, on many levels, that are kind of comical.
There's just one.
Is that whenever her best friend gets drunk or her ex-lover gets drunk, she gets really sloppy and she starts telling everybody that the two of them were together and how much she loves her. So she has this kind of conflict, like, I don't want to be alone in this homophobic world. I need her to be with me, but then on the other hand, I've got to control her behavior and what she says, which is impossible. I mean,
you
can't do that with other people. So a lot of it is her angst and trying to control situations that are not controllable, that she has no control over, but she thinks she does. And there's different situations that come up constantly in the play. She has a brother who is mentally ill, and the father doesn't want anything to do with the brother, but she invites the brother and his partner to the wedding. And I mean, it's one thing after the other, and really all she really wants is an idealistic movie version of a wedding, you know, those beautiful, wonderful weddings you see in the movies. That's what she's hoping to get.
Oh yeah, no, totally. It's like I can just see the imagery of you know with a creative director, you know, flashing things in there to emphasize all that. Now, so how much of that? I mean, now we get really revealing.
Really,
how much of that is autobiographical, and how much was you throwing curveballs into what was your own life?
Well. It's loosely based on my experience at a certain point in my life. But because it's a story and has to be told a certain way, I definitely had to add some things in. But for the most part, it's a story that everybody can relate to.
So was your own like bridesmaid wasn't your former lesbian lover though, right? Or
yep.
Oh, she you did that. Oh my God. Okay.
I did that. Yes. She really, yeah, I did that. So, I mean, you know, I've embellished some of the behaviors for the sake of characterization.
Well, I'm seeing great deep, undercurrents there that, it's like it's just the irony of a homophobic world when sort of the process of doing it is its own internalized homophobic world, falling through that. It's, sounds fascinating. So you decided, buck the current trend of all the young kids around us and let's go make a movie. And you focused on the stage. What is the process? I know for the movie, it's sort of like you put stuff together and you get this trailer out there and you put some money for that and, a treatment, then you get people to put more money and they make a film. And after you make the film, then you find distributors and you go to film festivals and off you hopefully go. What is the parallel for a play?
It's my first play, and I just I'm so naive, Rob. I just think, okay, I'm going to do this, and it'll get made, or somebody will buy it, right? So and I think it kind of comes in handy to think that way. Otherwise, I think I'd be, living somewhere else, doing something else. But the process is really, you mean the process of writing a play or a process of getting it to production?
Well, let's go to that next, but I meant the process of once you have it, what's the path to get it where it needs to go?
Well, the path that I took was that I started networking and getting in playwriting classes and hooking up with playwriting groups and finding out what theaters were interested in what content. And it's pretty simple. You just basically send your play or a 10-minute version of it to theaters when they're asking for it. And there's a lot of playwriting competitions in the United States, really all over the world. And they ask for certain content, like we're only looking for women writers or we're only looking for LGBT writers or et cetera, et cetera.
Right,
and
right.
Please send us, you have to send so much. You have to send so much information. And sometimes you send the whole script, either by email or by paper. And sometimes you just send, you pick out 10 pages that you think will grab them. And because I was still rewriting, I would send out pages, and I've rewritten since then. And they don't tell you, they don't send you a nice little letter and say, we're just so appreciative of your work, and we just want you to keep going, but we can't use you. You just hear nothing, or you hear we went another way.
Right,
it's pretty typical
right.
of what you would hear from, like, an acting agent. Or
yeah, actually, I
you
just,
go on an audition.
Just to let you know, I just did that because – We have a festival up here in Santa Cruz. It's I think it's called 8 at 8 or something to that effect. And what it is it's 8 10-minute plays that they put on in this festival. And you send in your play script that has to only be 10 minutes long. You send in the whole script, and they get like 300 of them. And I wrote up a script, and the only person who on the planet besides myself who's read the script, who is alive, is Garrett Miller, and he loved it. loved it. Unfortunately, they apparently did not. I got a letter which said they loved it, but later, so it got rejected. And so I it is a very weird thing. I mean, it's a really hard thing, especially with what you described, where you don't really get an answer at all, because you do not just jot stuff down. I mean, you bleed into plays. I mean, that's what a playwright does. And to wait and get that kind of thing back is pretty harsh. I think it's harsher than being an actor, because when I was an actor, I could get, I didn't look the right way or I didn't fit in with the other people that they were considering and all that stuff. But the playwright is sort of like, I'm sorry, this part of your soul, not cutting it.
That's funny you say that. I was thinking while you were talking that I think I take things much more personally as an actress than a writer.
Really?
And maybe because I'm a little removed from writing, I mean, as an actress, it's my skin, my body, my instrument is me. I'm up there, so it's kind of hard to say, well, we didn't choose you because it's not personal, to not take it personally. I mean,
right.
I think 25% of your time as an actor is spent in therapy talking about not taking things personally. You know what I mean? If you're not working, but we'll see. I'm still new at the writing thing. I mean, I've been writing poetry and songs, and this first collaboration with Terry on My Sister Is So Gay, it's been wonderful from start to finish. But this is my first solo project. But I feel like I have the support of the theater and, you know, people like you that are helping to get the word out. I'm just really grateful. And I'll see where it goes.
No, I think it's very exciting. The experience from a playwright point of view is huge. I mean, the thing I love about the theater, and this is true of film and other video and other expressions as well, is to take a script where you have this sort of image in your head of the people, especially when those people are germinating from your real life. So, you know, you know those faces already. And then to hand it over to another creative force that will cast it, set it, paint it, produce it, time it, you know, music it, everything around it. And all of a sudden it's this whole new three-dimensional world, many of the aspects of which weren't yours. They're this collaborative art that then unfolds. And then take it to the third level where the audience comes in and they start reacting to things somewhat differently than intended, but still, you know, effective and wonderful. And you realize that maybe your message wasn't the message that actually got to the stage and got heard, and that it has this whole other third dimensional effect to it. So it's almost like this huge bundle of miracle process that goes behind it when it ultimately comes together.
Well, that's,
I don't know if there's a question
the
in there. I should be asking questions.
Wonderful.
What do you think of that question?
Well, I think you're exactly on the money with all of that. And it made me think about the very first time that I wrote the screenplay for it. And I gathered, it was in Miami, and one of my best friends said, have the reading at my house. I said, I want to hear it out loud. I was so nervous, Rob. And these were my peers in Miami, my acting community. And so there were about 7 characters or 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 or 15. I don't know. I had so many characters. We all gathered, and I'm telling you what, before they first started reading it out loud, I was so nervous. And then once they started reading it out loud, it was so weird to hear some of your life experiences told by other people in a story setting, you know? Like when you lived it, and it was horrific, but now somebody else is telling the story through characterization. It was a really bad version, and I got 5 pages of notes. Because it didn't make sense, and it was just my first try at that. So
right.
I was so embarrassed and so full of shame, oh, my God, I'm a terrible writer. What am I doing? This story sucks. So I put it away, and I didn't go back to it for years. So a few minutes ago, I was like, I don't really take things personally. I'm pretty good about writing, but... It's been a long process.
Yeah, but you're right though. I shouldn't minimize the actor experience, because that is very personal too. It's, you know, it's like your face. But it's sort of like the whole process is, you know, putting, you know, these whole different parts of you, you know, out there for, you know, to be kicked around, which is probably why we have, you know, these egomaniacs in the arts, because you almost have to be to survive at different points. So what is the end goal of the, you know, we want to raise some funds to produce the play. What is the first theater that, you know, you see it going to or premiering in?
It actually has a commitment to premiere February 2017 at the Santa Monica Playhouse.
Well, there we go.
So it's ready for production, and my contribution to that production is $12,000. And So I'm raising $12,000. And there's lots of goodies. You know, we're on GoFundMe.com/GodAndSexTheplay. And there's lots of little gifts and things you get for donating. You can donate as little as $5 or as much as, you know, $5,000. If you donate $5,000, I will probably marry you. If you're not married, but
now I hate to say this, but that's probably going to be the subject of the next play of the the playwright who married the donor who gave $5,000 and
I love that. That would be such a cool story. That is a great story. I may write a 10-minute play about that. But there's lots. You know, you get, you know, signed cast posts. Poster by a signed cast. You get, depending on the level of your donation, you know, we have private talkbacks with the cast and whatnot. So I do have a firm commitment for the show. I'm just praying that I raise some money.
Okay, so now I've got a couple of weird questions because that's just who I am. So, okay, my first weird question is, you know, the play opens in Santa Monica Playhouse and everybody loves it and it's wonderful. And, you know, it magically makes its way to Broadway. And of course, you know, all the big money comes in and, you know, they go crazy and, you know, they, you know, like a la Smash, you know, the TV show. So they bring in the big director. Who is the big A-list cast that you would put in the play? We want names here.
Okay. You know who I would love to see is Amy. Do you know the actress Frances Ha? I mean, not Frances Ha, Greta Gerwig?
The name sounds familiar.
She's phenomenal. She's so quirky, and she's so fun, and she's so vulnerable and smart, and she's got so many levels as an actress. I saw the movie Frances Ha, and she played the lead. And that's Amy. I was like, oh, my God, that's Amy. You know, that's the name of the lead in God and Sex.
Realistic. Like, that's somebody you could likely get. I was going for Lady Gaga, but, you know, that sounds like a real honest-to-God, you know, potential. You know, this is like the story that comes out afterwards is, you know, Wendy did this little radio show and she, you know, fantasized that so-and-so would play the lead. And here we are on Broadway and guess who we have? You know, so that could happen.
I'd take Greta now, to be honest with you, in the stage, if she was a stage play, I would definitely, and I may just contact her anyway to see
there
if
you
she'd
go.
Do it. We haven't done the casting.
I bet you
yet.
Would.
We actually had, who knows, I'm definitely going to reach out to her. We had two actresses when you asked about the process before. I had about 4 or 5, maybe 6 readings of the play, and each time I had different actors and actresses in the role. And sometimes some of them would be really great and spot on and get the character, but the other half of the cast, you know, didn't get it in my mind the way I had written it. I never really got the total story of all the actors. So then last year in September, my mom was here visiting, and I called the Santa Monica Playhouse. I've worked with them as an actress over the years as well, and I just adore them, Chris DiCarlo and Evelyn Rudy. They're actually a couple. They've been running the Playhouse for about 55 years together here. And I called them, and I said, can I do a reading of my show for my mom? I want her to hear this out loud with actors here. And they were gracious, and they said, absolutely. And the two leads that read, the two women I had worked with, they played my daughters in a previous show, they read it and they nailed it. And I was like, for the first time, Rob, I saw it on stage. I saw these two women take my words and do not only exactly what I had intended, but elevated it beyond what I thought it could be. So casting
is really
important.
That's where it goes crazy. So who's the dream cast, you know, again, A-list, you know, Broadway for the fiance?
I don't know. I'm just so damn thrilled that I'm going to be doing it at Santa Monica Playhouse. That I'm just so thrilled. And Chris DiCarlo, in all the shows he's directed me in, he is a master at casting. He always puts together shows with people with tremendous chemistry. So I'm going to sit in on the casting sessions, and they've already told me that I can have some say in it, which I'm glad about because Amy's written very specifically, and I don't want her to be, well, blah, 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 listen to me, trying to control from 3 months out. Anyway, the point of that is that I don't really have an A-list cast, except the only person I can think of is Greta Gerwig for Amy, and the rest I would just let unfold and see what happens.
Well, great. Well,
I
really think you should go after her, because I think that inspiration has some real meaning to it. You know, that,
okay,
that her coming to you that way, it, you know, it, mentally and, you know, inspirationally, there's a reason for it. So, you know,
thank you. I will do that.
Yeah, my 2 cents. You know, it's like,
I'll take it.
Okay, here's my other weird question. So, you're a big success, a big hit, you know, in the dramatic theater stage of Broadway, and somebody comes and says, "Let's turn it into a musical." What kind of musical would it be?
What kind of musical would it be? What do you mean? Like, what kind of, like, name a musical it would be similar to?
Or like, what kind of genre of music would you infuse into it? I don't know why, but I'm completely non-musically talented. I couldn't write music, I couldn't play music, but I love music. And a lot of the theater stuff I do, I, for some reason, I always want to like throw Broadway songs into it. Maybe it's gay, I don't know. But it's like, we need a musical number here. So what musical numbers would you do if you turned it in, went that direction?
Anything that Mel Brooks would do, I would do. I just love
there
Mel Brooks. I can't think of, you know, I'm not a musical theater actress. I'm straight in terms of and acting. I mean, where I stumbled over all that. Yeah, still got some therapy to do. Anyway, Mel Brooks, that's the only thing I can think of. You remember the show Singing for Hitler, what was that?
Yeah, okay, there we go. Springtime for Hitler, yeah.
Springtime for Hitler. That was so bizarrely, uncomfortably funny.
Yes, I know, and it turned into our 2016 elections, unfortunately. So,
yeah. Yep.
If we only knew now, then when we knew now. So anyway, so what? You know, when the show goes on, what do you think LGBT people attending will take away? What do you think that will reach to them and our collective psyche seeing the show, or hope that it will?
Definitely a great story for LGBT. And the reason for that is because the lead character is, she's admitting to being bisexual because she can't utter the word gay. She can't even begin to perceive of herself as gay. You know, it takes place in the 90s, first of all. So we're in that time period, you know, we're only like 7 or 8 years out from the 80s. And AIDS had just started in the early 80s. And so there still was a lot of prejudice towards the LGBT community. And it wasn't something you said out loud. You didn't say, "I've been with women," or "I'm bisexual," or "I'm gay." You just didn't. It was a very closeted lifestyle. I think it's in some way, you know, in some areas of the country, probably still like that. But this takes place in a major metropolitan city. So she wants to live a normal life. She wants to be looked at and considered normal. And in her mind, because she has her own homophobic ideas, she believes getting married to a man will, in her eyes, make her normal. And she struggles with that a lot. And she adores her ex-lover, who, you know, plays the other lead in the play. And the character's name is Karen. And Karen is always trying to bring Amy back to reality and back to non-homophobia, you know?
Right.
And Amy's not having any of it. So she really struggles with her sexuality, and she has no place to go for it. So she doesn't feel comfortable talking about it. And so she sets her mind on a path, and that path is, I'm going to walk down the aisle and get married to this man. And this man, who she's marrying, has loved her since the day he set eyes on her in high school. So he's kind of blind to all of her defects or any of her struggles. So it's like they both decide that they need this pathway in order to be fully human or realized or something. You
right.
can figure that out for yourself. And what's interesting is that she decides to plan a wedding in a town and a church, the reason for the God part in it, that is homophobic. And that's not uncommon. It's just a play about it. And so she meets with a minister who's going to marry the two of them. And it's a really rough experience.
I'm totally enthralled. And because it sounds so authentic in terms of not just, you know, that scenario, but it speaks to the coming out psyche. I mean, it's,
yes.
I know for me when I was in high school and, you know, I lived a lot of that, not getting married or, you know, having an ex-lover or any of that, you know, environment around me. But, you know, I segmented myself. You know, there was sort of like this gay part of me inside that I went to every once in a while. And it was like, you know, what it was. And then I would step away from that into this predetermined straight pathway that I was totally dedicated to. And, you know, if we sat down and talked, I would have said, this is exactly what I want. And this is how I feel and all this stuff with this other gay part, like compartmentalized. And I kind of related to the idea of being bi, not because I'd had bi feelings, because I actually didn't at all. You know, I was totally that gay closet part had all of me in that regard. But that I mentally had two worlds that were kind of bisexual. And so, you know, and this is where I was really going though, but in order to keep that wall up between the two, I had to exercise really extreme homophobia. I mean, I don't recall specifically bullying anybody who was gay, but, you know, I had that potential. I mean, it was like I certainly laughed at all the homophobic stuff and, you know, carried the signs for homophobia, you know, to maintain all that. So I think that's very true, what you've developed.
Right, and she also feels isolated from not only the straight community, because she doesn't feel like she really belongs there because of her experiences, but also the gay community. The gay women feel like she's a lie, that she's really gay and that she can't be bi and that she's walking down the aisle. So none of her gay friends that she knows supports her. So she's just like on this precipice of, where do I belong? Who am I, and am I bi or am I gay, or... oh, well, I can't think about that right now. I've got a wedding to plan. You know, she throws her hair back. Right. I mean, literally, she just keeps going back to, you know, the issue will come up and she'll be like, okay, back to the wedding, you know. And then there's a surprise at the end, you know, where the story takes you. It leads up to the planning of the wedding, and then the first year of the marriage.
Wow. Which, yeah, I can only imagine that, so we don't want to give too much away. So now where does the play is already somewhat in production, it sounds like.
Well, we're in pre-production.
Pre-production, okay.
The casting, yeah, the casting, it's a long process. The casting will begin in January. It may even begin a little bit this month. I'm not sure. We only had one or two meetings, so where we are now.
Well, very exciting. And let's give some of the logistics. Where can the GoFundMe be found and more information about the play?
Okay, so the play is God and Sex. And there's no website yet because once it goes up on the SantaMonicaPlayhouse.com website, all the information about the play and the tickets and the cast and the posters will be there. So I haven't created my own personal website for it. So right now I'm raising money. I have I think about 10% raised so far, and I haven't been on GoFundMe that long, so I'm really excited about that. So where you can go is GoFundMe, all one word, .com, and then /, God and Sex, the Play. And there's a little video there and all the information about the play and what you get. Like for $25, you get an acknowledgement in the program, and for $50, you get a signed poster by the cast. $100, you get 2 tickets to the show, and, you know, and on it goes.
Perfect.
So,
and you can be followed on Twitter. Which handle?
Oh, Wendy_Michaels_.
And do you have a Facebook page also? Or
I do. Wendy Michaels, actress.
There you
on
go.
Facebook,
so,
and a website that I'm redoing, but will have much more specific information. It's actually being redone as we speak. That's wendymichaels.net.
Great. Okay. So we aren't done yet. I just wanted to get all of that out there so that we didn't. I hate waiting to the very end when you try to spiel off all that stuff, and if you hit a blank when you're trying to do that, it's like, wait, it's coming to me. The URL is coming to me. So anyway,
of a weird thing to be raising money for your own project, but I really want to see this story told, because I really do believe there are gay women, bisexual women, like you said, the psyche of coming out, and
right.
I think it's interesting even for the straight community, because I'm sure everyone has a cousin, an uncle, an aunt, you know, somebody that they know that struggled with their own sexuality and their own need to be normal and fit in. I mean, it doesn't have to be sexuality. It can also be, you know, that desire, that need to belong and fit in and try to put that square peg in a round hole.
Well, it also, from what you described, and, you know, obviously I haven't seen the script, so I don't know how, you know, how dramatized this part of it is, but, and maybe I'm reflecting also on some of the past wedding experiences I've been involved in, but it's, we as a society, as an American society specifically, do tend to go for the show. You know, it's like, it's all about, you know, from the minute, you know, this couple who has worked up to the point where they decide, you know, we're going to do this, pretty much from that second on, the whole emotional, what are you doing with your life? Do you want to really only live with one other person? And, you know, is, you know, are you going to breathe the same air with this person forever? And, you know, all that is involving, from sexual orientation to emotional dependency to financial, you know, integration and all that stuff, all of that gets put aside for what colors are we going to choose? What's the icing going to be? What's the tablecloth going to be? Where should we have it? Who shall sit with who? And, you know, all of those things. And it's just kind of an interesting phenomena, I think.
You know where I did not see that happen? And that was my youngest nephew, his wedding that happened 2 years ago, his bride, and was very specific on what she wanted her wedding to look like, even to the point where she just kind of backed away from including a lot of the family members in it, because we held very strong voices about what we thought she should do. And she had the most unusual wedding. It was so different, and it sounded kind of quirky and like so non-traditional when she was talking about it. And I know there was some judgment, and there was for me, like, really, this is how you want to get married? And I'm telling you what, it was so special and so unique and a lot of fun. I mean, it was really a lot of fun because it was theirs. It was like being invited to a special party.
Right.
It was great. So.
Yeah. And I agree. And I don't mean to put down weddings, because I do them. But I guess my point was that the process of that production becomes the overriding thing up to the minute of the question is asked to the commitment itself. You know, the arc
yes.
in there is all, it's like putting together a show, you know, And for me, my process when I work with a couple is I actually sit down and interview them. I go through all their poetic likes, dislikes, and hear their stories in very, very specific detail. And I write the script for the wedding then. And that's what I deliver as the officiant. And it's always their story, very specific to them. I'm actually a movie title in my resume now, because I married three couples before my nephew. And the second couple I married, her husband, about 2 years later, passed away, and she had me officiate at his funeral. And so with my nephew's wedding, I'm officially, wait for it, four weddings and a funeral. So that's my resume.
Oh, wow.
There. But
my
the
goodness.
That was weird. But the you know, so we tell the story of, you know, the couple, and it's very them. You know, every wedding I've done, it's been very the couple, you know, projected out there. But just, you know, even with the couple, one couple, because it was gay marriage, and they'd been together 20 years, and then they were having their wedding. And it still became, that whole arc was the production of the wedding, you know, before,
mm-hmm.
rather than anything really thinking, what is marriage? So anyway, my point about that was, I see that something that straight people would take away from your play, kind of a really thought-provoking element to that whole aspect.
Well, yay.
So, Wendy, believe it or not, we only have 3 minutes left of this hour-long interview. What haven't we covered that we should have?
I think we've covered just about everything. I'm really excited to get the word out, and I'm excited it's being done at a playhouse that all of the important benchmarks of my relationship with some people, I don't want to give it away, the show, happened while I was performing at the playhouse. So I'm really excited that the world premiere of God and Sex will be there.
Oh, it sounds magical and wonderful. And again, if you want to hear more about this, we are going to talk about it again on Out in Santa Cruz in a week from this Saturday, which will be the 10th of December. Wendy's going to be my guest there as well. The show's a little differently formatted, so we'll probably have to speed things up a little bit, but we'll cover some similar ground, and we'll have Bash's questions, and he'll have a whole fresh aspect to ask you about. Next week, this Saturday, I want to mention on Out in Santa Cruz, I have Kristen Collier, who, interesting life experience, similar in a weird sort of way. She was a housewife, and one day her husband came home and let her know that he, in fact, was going to be her wife. And she found herself in a transgender marriage. And so that's their story. And she's written a book, and we are going to hear her story. And that'll be this Saturday on December 1st on Out in Santa Cruz. And you can listen to that on outinsantacruz.com or KSCO.com, or if you're in the Santa Cruz area, AM 1080 or FM 104.1. And Wendy, quickly, what is happening with My Sister Is So Gay?
My Sister Is So Gay premieres on telofilms.com. It's the LGBT Netflix. And it'll be streaming beginning January 29th. We'll have lots of interviews and whatnot leading up to it. But that's where you can find it. You can go to My Sister Is So Gay on YouTube and see the trailer.
Exciting. Well, thank you so much for joining us. They're going to cut us off in like 5 seconds. So, again,
thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I hope you had fun. So we'll do it again in a week from Saturday. And I'm excited.
Terrific.
All
I right. am too. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Wendy. Bye.
Bye.